Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
American Giant makes great clothing, T-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Welcome to Shelor Select. The whole system will be ready in a few minutes. Take your seat and enjoy.
Jason Bielski, round two. You're back, baby.
Round two, man. It's great to be back. Thanks for having me. This impromptu session, I guess.
So. Yeah, a little Friday night podcast. I mean, haven't done one this late in a while. But, yeah, man, it's always just hanging out with the boys, chilling, catching up. Got a few drinks.
Speaking of which, let's cheers, man.
Cheers,
cheers, man. Brother. Oh, I dribbled a little bit.
Be all right.
It won't be the first, or it won't be the last, right?
For sure. But let's fire off, man. Let's get things flowing here. Let's just start. New news for you. You're Dr. Bielski now.
As of Monday, man. This year, Monday, last Monday. I don't know when this episode will come out, but I.
Next week.
And yeah, I'm a doctor now. It feels weird to even say. Like, I keep telling people, it's like, they're like, how do you feel? And I'm like, you know I should feel like better or like super stoked, and that's not to say I'm not, but yeah. It's like so surreal, like all of that work, energy, time, commitment, all of the years in school, and it's like done, which is,
it's like a weight lifted off your shoulders.
It is, but it's also like I almost feel a teeny bit lost because I've spent so much time focusing on it, stressing on it. Once that like got lifted, I was like, I'm used to my brain feeling like it's swimming with information or thoughts or things I've got to do. And after that, like sitting at the bar with my advisor, having a drink, like celebrating, I was like, I don't have to stress about that thing I'm always stressing about. Like every day, like even after work or after the gym, I'm laying in bed and the thought of the PhD or working on the thesis was always there, taking a shower. Hell, even it's sex sometimes, it like creeps in, you know, like
sure,
it's always present and it's always looming. And I think that's like one of the worst things as a grad student is like when you work a regular job, most of the time when you clock out, you leave your work on your desk. You don't have to do too much. Maybe you check an email or respond to someone, like if it's an emergency or, but for the most part, your work is left at your desk, right?
I get that.
Going forward, that's like what I want to approach, like working. But then in grad school, it followed you every day, every night, on vacation. It was in your dreams, or at least for me, it felt like that. Yeah. It just was always there, always present, and just, it was a lot. It was a lot of like constant stress, and just that weight of it all is like, I feel taller almost, you know? It's sure. It's really weird, but it's good. It's an amazing feeling, and I'm not used to saying it yet. But I do keep trying to slip in opportunities to say Dr. Well, Bielski.
Yeah, you should. You earned it.
I like to joke around. I have my boating license, so I'm a captain, and I coach at the gym. So I like to say that I'm Dr. Coach Captain Bielski. I like the three titles. I obviously can't put them all on my mailing address, but you know, you can, whichever order is fine. I prefer the most prestigious
of
first.
Course.
But
of course.
We'll go by anything. It's fine. Yeah. But it's great. Thanks. I think you said congratulated me, and I didn't thank you for it, but
wow,
thanks.
Cool, man.
It's great, and I'm so glad to be done. And in a way, like I remember, I think the last time you had me on, I talked about how I was almost wanting to get out of entomology.
Yeah.
And in the last like couple of months, I've like almost found a new passion for it. Like as I was finishing up and realizing that this project's done and I don't need to work on this insect anymore. And like the future's in front of me. What do I want to do? And I was offered a postdoc in a different lab on a different insect. So I like thinking about that, I was like, man, this is what I'm good at. I've spent so long working on it.
Mm-hmm.
So much of my life focusing, honing in these skills. And yeah, sure, it's niche. It's entomology. It's, you know, not the first thing people think of when you say you're a doctor or a scientist. Definitely don't raise your hand on the plane when they ask for a doctor. But either way, it was still a lot of work. It's something. And when I was offered that postdoc or really started thinking about jobs afterwards, I was like, you know what? I think I do want to do this. And there's a couple of reasons for that. It was mostly money is the big one. Like I'm sitting over 100K in debt from school, which isn't that bad for getting a PhD.
It's not really.
VT paid for the schooling. So it was just extra money I took out to support myself. So I didn't have to work like crazy extra hours to feel like I needed to support myself. Obviously the gym supported me quite a bit. But yeah, I was offered a postdoc, and while the like rate hasn't been agreed on yet and no paperwork has been signed, it's pretty official. And the base rate of a postdoc at Tech right now is I think 54-55K a year, which even if I got that lowest number, I would then be a faculty member, would get benefits that apply to that. And also it's double my income currently. So needless to say, I know it's not the greatest figure, but for the age I am, about to be 28, like with a PhD, no master's, and not work experience with the PhD, you know what? I'm happy to do the postdoc, get more CV lines, more publications, more experience on different pests and crops, and build the resume more and double my income, essentially. Nice. Like it's... really excited for that. I've already planned out my first like couple of grand, I'm not gonna lie. It's not going to the student loan right away.
Yeah,
it's,
what do you got planned?
Buddy, I'm getting a wakeboard.
Okay.
Haven't found the model or whatnot, but I've been looking around and I was like, you know, I've only ever used like standard wakeboards. Like not bad, not amazing, but your run of the mill wakeboard, couple $100. And I was like, you know what? I do it so much in the summer. I wake up in the morning, coach, and then go wakeboard till like 8 or 9 if the weather's good.
Sure.
With one of my friends from the gym, your friend too. But like it's a great way to spend the summer. I get to do the activity I like want to do the most early in the day. So the rest of the day of work and shit just feels great. I've already done the thing I want. Right. Now I got to just grind out this work and work out and sleep. It's amazing, and it's how I love spending my summer. And I'm like, you know, I haven't had the money before, but I'd love to treat myself to a little nice thing. And
treat yourself.
And it's like any sport too. Like obviously the equipment isn't going to make someone pro or really, really good. Like a CrossFit, the shoes aren't going to make you lift more.
100%.
But they might help you establish better skills because the equipment is more designed for a higher skill level individual, like golf clubs, you know?
Yeah.
But I've always been under the, like the idea of learn with the shitty things or the standards. Like if you're learning BMX, learn on a heavier bike. Then when you get a lighter one, you can jump a foot extra in the air without doing anything else,
right,
or anything like that. It's always learn with the shitty stuff. And as you improve and get better, then you know,
yeah, it's like get the fundamentals down and then learn, actually figure out you like it first and then grow from there rather than go and pay an X amount of money. And then all of a sudden you decide you hate it. And then you're like, well, I'm $2,000 in golf clubs here that I'm never going to use. And
that was me. Like I you know, obviously, but I just started golfing with you and some of the boys last month. You're looking at I did my math on my handicap. Since I have only played at a couple of courses and not a repeat at any course, I just took the average of all of them.
Okay.
Since I know I'm not supposed to do it that way. You're supposed to do it by course, but I did. Did the equation. Do you want to take a guess at the number?
21.
That's way higher than that.
Okay.
Way higher than
that. I don't
that.
Remember your scores. It's like 41?
It's 51.
51.
It's terrible. Actually, no. When you do the final math, it's 51 before the like 96 percentile conversion. So like 51 before that, but then after the conversion, it's 49. So I'm below the 50s. I've dipped down below.
That's not bad, bro.
But you know what? When you look at the scores over the last like couple times we played, so every weekend, essentially.
Sure.
They have gone down, and I'm feeling more consistent and better. And like, I did go out and get a set of clubs, but I only spent like $250-$300 on them.
That's about
and,
right.
You know, like, got to learn with something. And a buddy gave me a driver. Another buddy lets me use his putter because I really like it. So, like, it's all coming together. And, you know, it's funny. We kind of jumped on golf right away. I talked with someone at a wedding I was at last night for, like, probably 2 hours about it. And he's, like, he's really good. He's shooting par on most courses, or like plus one. So like his handicap was like 12.
Oh, he's good.
11. He's pretty good.
I'd say so.
I was like, but it was fun talking with him because I was clearly new and a novice, but like passionate and enjoyed it. And,
yeah.
But I think the thing I like the most about it is, like, unlike other hobbies that I've had or things I've gotten into, and I think I even got into it the last podcast, like, I get really into things. Like, CrossFit, I got really into it really quick. It was like, oh, I like this, and it's a new drug for me.
Mm-hmm.
Golf is not necessarily like that. I like it, and I have, you know, been spending extra time watching material, reading things about it, spending 2-3 hours on the range just because I had time. $6 of balls later, I'm feeling like I improved a little bit, and I think I enjoy that aspect of the sport more, where instead of going crazy into it and, like, feeling I need to be, like, better, sure. I'm just doing it for fun.
That's the way to
and
be.
And, like, it's...
And hopefully you'll get better along the way just doing it for fun rather than just make it, like, a job.
Yeah, and when you feel like you've got those pressures on you to do something really well, or, like, you get angry about it, like, it's just, it takes away from the fun of, like, why you're even out there doing the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? If you, like, that's, like, one of the reasons I, like, kind of got the idea of competing with CrossFit out of my mind is because I just enjoy the thing. When I make it, like, mentally important to me, like, if I don't do well at this comp, I'll be pissed at myself.
Sure.
But, like, that's not why I got into this sport. I got into this sport because it was just fun.
Yeah.
And I see you picking up the cards.
No,
there.
We're good there. I'll be playing with
them. We did talk about doing an intro, and then we just kind of jumped in.
I like where we're going at. I'm sitting here playing with them. Because I was thinking, you know, is it one of the things that it's just something, when you pick up something new like golf and CrossFit and stuff, is it just the fact that it's new? Is it the fact that I'm not good at it yet and I just want to be better at it? Is that what makes it sexy to you?
I think, like, both of those in a way. Yeah, there's, like, one aspect of me that I'm like, I've struggled with perfectionism all of my entire life. Still to this day, I still struggle with it. So trying to be the best or perfect or as good as I physically can be is something I'm always, like, battling with. In grad school, I battled it, and it got the best of me. And in a lot of things, you will learn, like most people, that trying to be perfect or master a thing is almost impossible.
Of course.
You talk to people, even Tiger Woods, he's got things he wants to improve on.
Yeah.
You know, or other people and other things.
Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan.
The greatest of anything always wants to improve on something, and that's, like, I think something to... really take from masters of a thing is that even the masters have room to grow.
Yes.
Or, like, are trying to improve or work on weaknesses that they address. And, like,
you never stop learning.
Yeah. Almost. So that's, like, that's one of the aspects of why I, like, tend to, like, get into things like that. But the other, I do tend to have, like, just a really addictive personality. And I've been trying to get away from it. So, like, practicing it with a new hobby, like golf, is great because I'm now practicing, taking a step back, enjoying the time that I'm spending with friends and outside and just swinging a club, you know, like, and that's, like, some of the little joys in life. That's what we live for, is that's why we work 40, 50, 60 hours a week and go through terrible jobs or have shitty experiences. And, that's why we do that, is for, you know, weekend warriors or that hour of wakeboarding in the morning or golfing on Sunday with the boys or whatever. Like, and it's always good to remind yourself of those. That's why we're here, right? Yeah. Is to enjoy this existence and not be miserable or put too much pressures on yourself to be good at a thing.
Exactly. Going back a little bit, you know LeBron James, right?
Baseball player?
Basketball.
I'm not into sports very much. But
okay, I knew you said that once. But anyway, recent podcast he was on, he talked about being, you almost, I'm paraphrasing this, you almost have to kill your family in order to be so great at a certain thing.
Yeah.
And which he didn't mean literally kill your family, but, and then they went into, like, how Michael Jordan was, like, almost psychotic, just trying to be so good. It didn't matter if you tried to beat him or whatever. He just, it would infuriate him, and he would just do everything he could to beat you, no matter what, and be great at whatever it is if he's trying to do it. they were flipping coins across the room, and he just wanted to win so badly, just at that, like, who get closest,
like,
to the wall.
Something that's literally just statistical chance. So, it's no, there's no skill involved with flipping a coin, but it, his mindset with things is like, I'm going to win this.
But I guess what I'm asking, like, you have to almost be that type of person to be great at anything or to get through these hard objects and just know that, hey, I can push aside all these things if I really want to be good at something, or do I just... Is there a balance? I mean, is it like be good at it or have a good family life or have a bad family life and be the, you know, the master, the goat of whatever you're trying to do? Does that kind of make sense?
Are you asking me how I view that? Yeah, like, do I agree with your statement?
I mean, like, because you said, like, when you get into something, you get really addicted and you want to, like, get into it. You want to be good at it, badass and stuff. And, like, so is that kind of your thinking? Is that, like, I'm going to push everything aside so I can just focus completely on this? And, like, now you were just saying, like, well, now I want to, like, take the time and, like, enjoy golf and have fun with the boys and try to be good at it at the same time.
But I think younger me would have 100% agreed with that statement. Yes, you do need to, if you want to be good or successful at a thing, there's things you're going to have to cut out of your life that are either holding you back emotionally or physically.
Okay.
Whether that be people, like family, friends, a significant other, whether that be spare time and hobbies and passions or all of the above, right? And for a lot of my life specifically, I have done that. You can ask my family or anyone that's listening to this podcast and knows me personally. They would probably say, yeah, I have seen him do that. Even with me and you at the gym, you've seen me go hard for years to the point where I'm practically wobbling.
Yeah, like on a bike or whatever. I've seen you just go ham, like, man. Even with any workout.
Or just working out for 3 hours, lifting and lifting and lifting, hitting like 90%+ day after day after day, tearing my body apart because I had this goal, this like vision for myself that I didn't even quite know what it was, but I knew I could just do more, do better, be, I wouldn't say the greatest because it was pretty clear I would never be the greatest at that sport specifically, but I always put it on myself to be the physical best I can at almost anything. And it is a nice character trait to have, but it can blind you, as we discussed.
But it sets you apart from other people, too, as far as, like, meeting your goals. And, like, you can go get in a doctor. Some people will be like, no, I don't want to go try to do a thesis because either probably that they think that's too hard or maybe that doesn't meet their career goals. But
for focusing on one thing for 4 years, 5 years, that's a lot for a lot of most people to even think about. You know, imagine thinking about one subject intensely for 4 years straight. Like, everything is riding or dying on this. Mm-hmm. It's like not only the pressure, but like you want to make it as good as you can. And that fell through in my research too. And that was a struggle because I do agricultural based research. And anyone that does research in field or ag research knows that it's sloppy.
Yeah.
It's messy, just like agriculture and farming. It's not easy. And it's not perfect like a lab. We've got the environment we're dealing with, so many variabilities. And trying to be perfect with something like that is impossible. You're setting yourself up for failure. And that's like probably one of the best pieces of advice I would give to like a new grad student is forget the idea of trying to be perfect. You thought you were perfect in your undergrad, or maybe you didn't.
Yeah.
You think you're perfect at other things you've done in life. Drop that. Learn how to fail and be okay with it. Because the quicker you can pick yourself up from a failure, learn from it, take notes, and grow, instead of kicking yourself in the butt because you just weren't perfect, or maybe you're writing a paper or making a figure or something, a bar chart.
So, like, learn from your mistakes,
basically. Yeah, but with this example I'm giving, say you're just writing or something, and I've struggled with this last week when I was finishing my dissertation writing. Like, you want it to be perfect. 122 pages, you just want everything to be perfect. No errors. No typos, which is difficult. I have dyslexia, so there's typos always. Right. And my committee grinded me on that. But back to the point, like, it's never going to be perfect. There's always going to be an extra space somewhere or a font that's different or just the little tiny things, like an indentation for some reason in the page has an error code and it's like twice the size than it should be. And like Joe's little things are going to drive you insane. You've just got to move on. I know that's a crazy, stupid example. It's small. It's insignificant.
Well, I get it, man.
But like being a student and like all the little things add up. And if you're so stressed about the highlighter color you're using or missing a note or like forgetting something in a paper or even being critiqued, you're going to be your worst enemy. And you're there to grow and become better, not be perfect.
Mm.
Ask any advisor. no one's perfect, you know?
Oh, I agree, 100%.
But back to your point about, like, the GOATs, mm-hmm. Braun, Michael, Woods, those people have a thing, I think, that is, or even, like, Matt Frazier, they have a thing that's, like, I wouldn't say it's, like, a disease, but it almost is, that ability to completely separate yourself from everything. That one thing that you do, that goal, to be the best at that thing, basketball, golf, whatever yeah. it is that's a completely different character trait than what I'm describing. Perfectionism is one thing, but they exemplify it to its like highest degree, I think.
Okay.
Those individuals are working not only harder than everyone else, but have learned or are just naturally born in a way to block out other things like that.
Oh, for sure.
Because you have to. You can't have the stress of family BS on top of you while you're trying to win a national championship or mm-hmm. put 400 pounds over your head. Like, you can't be thinking about that. You, the only thing you can think about is the thing you've mastered, right?
Mm-hmm.
Be in the zone. And those individuals, those 1% of the 1%, the 1% of the professionals are a diamond dozen, and you're born like that. I think it's like the one, like Southern nursery rhyme goes, the one guy that's born with a hammer and or a chisel and mines through a mountain. I can't remember his name. I learned it in school like a long time ago. I can't even remember the name. It's like a nursery rhyme or something like that. But he was born with like a pickaxe because he was made to do that one thing in life. He was so good at it, he could beat the machines that were made to do it.
This sounds familiar.
He could bore. He bore. He raced a machine that was for digging through mountains. He raced it with just a pickaxe and beat it. In the story, right? And obviously, it's fake. But there's a lesson to be learned there that I, which isn't the typical lesson of it. But this is something I'm taking from it. Is that like there are people that are born to do a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's like manifest destiny or like religiously based. It's like they're just. That is what they've been put here to do. They might be a shitty human being, the worst, someone that is not actually a good role model or someone you'd actually want to strive to be besides money or fame. But that's what drives them is either the money, the fame, or the thing that they're just blessed mm-hmm. to be good at.
You think they know that? Like they just find it along the way?
I don't think it's like a self-discovery no, or like they have like they're 10 years old and they're like, wow, I'm really, really good at this thing. I need to pursue it. I think it's literally like it's just a – you are that way. You don't think about it. You don't have to try to push people away. You just do it naturally because the thing that's important to you is always coming out on top no matter what. So does that make sense?
It does.
I was kind of rambling and
beating like,
around the bush a little bit. But.
Well, it's just, it makes perfect sense just because you kind of find it – like you know, like you said, not self-discovery, but you kind of find it along the way and that's – or maybe it finds you. Maybe is that kind of what you were saying? But you learn. But most people always continue what they're good at if they find it early or later in life. You know, like, hey, I'm good at this. I want to keep it going for whatever reasons. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, not many people want to keep doing something they're bad at. But unless it's you're just
rare, most people want to do something.
Unless you're just like, at, hey, you know, if you pick up, not many people will pick up a guitar and be can play it instantaneously. Unless you just, you know, or just. Born with that. Gifted, like people who just play piano by ear or whatever.
Or one of those people that's the one thing they can do is like draw amazingly, like, but they can't talk. They can't, they can't, they're not functional in society, but they can do something like a master. They're born that way. It's not a choice they ever made. They just do it. They picked up a brush and were good. And that's obviously very study kind of thing, but.
Malcolm Gladwell, is that his name? Malcolm Gladwell? You know what I'm talking about?
No.
He wrote a book, and I can't remember. I've read it, but I can't remember, like, mastery. But anyway, his whole thing about it is, like, you have to put 10,000 hours into anything to become a master at it. Like, I think he brought up one example of the Beatles. This kind of sounds familiar now that we're talking about it, but I remember this at that point. I was like, 10,000 hours? I was like, what? This kind of makes sense. You put in your 10 hours. I mean,
and when you think about it, it's like, that's... It sounds like a lot of hours, but when you start doing a thing regularly and put time into it, study it, think about it, like the hours add up quick. My dad was a ranger, so he was a jump master as well.
Yep.
I think he had over 1,000 confirmed jumps from helicopters and planes, like combined. And I think the way we've talked about the 10,000 number as well, because I've taken that to heart. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to be good at it. I need to think about it in that time frame. And it's going to take years of practice. And I've said that to him. And he's like, they said that to us in jump school, that if you want to be a jump master, because all Rangers are paratroopers, but not all Rangers are jump masters.
Okay.
It takes a lot more time, dedication, and the luck of the cards, being able to have the knees to survive that.
Sure.
But he said it took about that 1,000 hours or 10,000 hours is like, that's about the training he had to become a master of that skill. And even to this day, he's like, I could probably jump out of an airplane, set myself up blindfolded. He's like, I know what to do. Like, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit.
No, it makes sense. Like, but, you know, like you were just saying, like, put that many hours into it, I would hope you could just do it blindfolded.
You know, and let's even just take like my grad degree, for example. Like, I wouldn't say I'm a master of entomology. I'm a doctorate, actually. But pun intended there. But all jokes aside, like when you think about the amount of time that went into it, like every credit hour of schooling is usually associated with 20 to 40 hours of like studying or work for that thing. So if you're taking a 3-credit-hour class, it's like 60 to 40 hours a week. You probably should be, or not a week, sometime. And I can't remember the math there exactly. I'm blanking. I don't want to harp on it too long, but it's associated with time. And when you add up all the time and hours, writing, research, the things that I've done, like I'm probably close to 10,000 hours on like that thing. Do I feel like a master? No. Do I have a lot of room to grow and get better and learn more and improve? Yes. But yeah, that's a really great thing to consider. That 10,000 hours. I wrote it here. And I'm circling it because it's like, that's something I should constantly remind myself of too. Like if you ever get frustrated that you're not good at a thing, like, be like, I've only got less than 100 hours.
Yeah, it's like when we play golf. I mean, you hit one good shot, then all of a sudden there's 3 bad shots and you're just like, what the hell? Then all of a sudden another good one and it brings it all back in. You're like, that's why I would play.
And then you humble yourself. You're like, you know, I've only been doing this. I think about the hours. I'm like, okay, we play 5 hours every week. We played 4 weeks. That's 20 hours. And I've gone to the range for like 3 plus maybe an hour of practice my first time ever. So that's like 25 hours.
Yeah.
That's crazy that I'm even seeing improvement with that level of like hours. So like, humble yourself. Remember, those bad shots are for a reason. Mm-hmm. Like, I will get better and learn what not to do. And
well, you're very self-observant. Is that the word I'm looking
for? Aware, I guess.
Self-awareness, yeah. Because, like, you know, when we were at the range together, I hear you talking about, like, okay, well, like, maybe if I turn my hands this way. Or, like, you know, when you said you went there by yourself the other day, you learned a couple different things you were doing wrong. Mm-hmm. And how to change it up. Where other people were just, they have to have a coach or somebody watching them. But, you know, even, like, you know, when you do a lift or anything, you can kind of feel like, okay, I did something wrong there. But a lot of people don't have that. And that makes you a little bit different aside just because you can feel like what you're doing right and wrong. And you have the knowledge just to be able to be like, all right, let me change something here.
Do you think that, here's a question for you. Do you think like all people have that ability to do that? Like, I guess, like, why are you pointing that out as something that I have?
Because I don't hear it very often.
Okay.
I mean, you know, when we're coaching people at the gym, they're like, what'd I do wrong?
Right.
Like, and they just instantly ask, and like they're either looking for your assurance or they're just looking for you to critique them, or they're just looking for it rather than
like
just being.
Assurance is a big word there. That, like, not obviously not a long word to say or spell, right. But like, right,
that's. But they're just waiting for you to tell them rather than you be like, well, did you feel it? I mean, did you see that you didn't go below parallel? Did you see your knees caved in? Like, did you feel that? And like, some of them, I've heard some people are like, yeah, I think it did.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other people who are like, I don't know. What's
it? There's even people that I've seen like that have been working out for 10 plus years and still have those types of questions, or like, I'd almost want to say it's like a level of insecurity.
Yeah. Like not, I, yeah, that makes
that
sense.
Word feels a little strong and charged. So I don't mean it to be like negative towards anyone specifically or like anything, but like, I think that kind of is what that's associated with, is why people will do that is like a little bit of lack of self-confidence in a thing they don't think they're good at.
Right.
And maybe that's because in this specific example, it's lifting or like Olympic lifting. And one, it's already a very difficult thing.
Sure.
Probably one of the hardest things anyone can do in like any like physical sport, really. It's technical, powerful, hard. But even people that have done like lifting for 10 years and still feel like they don't know what they're doing. They're like, I feel like I've done this forever and my maxes haven't improved in 5 years. I like don't know what I'm doing wrong. I never feel good. And I wonder if those people, this is like, two thought. Let me just write down my quick thought here because I know I'm going to forget the first thought.
For those listening, Dr. Bielski's keeping notes as we go. We're trying to keep ourselves on track for this.
Dude, I was so bad last time. Like, I know there were 20 times in the talk we were like, man, I don't even remember what like started that tangent, and then we were lost and just went on something else. But back to that, like the CrossFit insecurity lifting type thing, I think that it stems from two things. Hobbies, like for me, CrossFit's a hobby, not just fitness in my life. Like it's not just something I do to stay healthy. It's a hobby. I actually enjoy, for some reason, doing burpees and muscle ups and putting my body through that hell. There's like a lot of reasons to why I love it, and I could go into that for an hour, but I think the point here is that for me, it's a hobby, it's a passion, but for a lot of other people, it's a means to an end. It's fitness. It's the hour a day they go work out, maybe socialize a little bit, camaraderie, feel good about themselves for moving a thing or pushing their body a little harder than they thought they could go. So when like technicality comes in, am I doing a thing right, coach? Did that lift look good? Like that lack of self-confidence. Cause you and I, we know when a lift, like you feel you're wobbly or you're out of position. Things didn't move. You are aware the second you lift that bar and before it's even cleaned or over your head, you know something was wrong, or like you're just not feeling good today, like body wise or like any workout, you can feel that same thing. You're so self-aware of your body that you know that as a good athlete. And I think, but you also maybe not currently or you're struggling with it, but like had a large passion for CrossFit and fitness in general and just pushing your body to what it could do.
100%.
So I think you also would share that like passion for pushing yourself and critiquing yourself, not needing someone to be there to be like, this is what you did wrong. That's helpful for people like us because we're always in our head thinking about self-critiquing.
Of course.
So it is helpful to have like that coach or someone guide you. But I think going back to that insecurity thing, I think that's the stem of it, is like for us, it's a hobby. It's a passion.
Yes.
And I think that's the big, big, big one. And I wrote down here, hand-holding. You kind of alluded to it, like not actually physically holding someone's hand.
Right, but like somebody's like walking you through the whole workout or whatever.
Some people are like that in general with life and with work and hobbies and passions. Like some people need to be handheld through everything they do. And it's not meant to be bad. Like that's maybe just how you learn and absorb information.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
No, I agree. Just,
think I'm more self-driven and can accept that, okay, I'm not a master of a thing, but I know my body and I know what the ball is supposed to do when I shoot it. I wanted it to go straight and it didn't. How can I correct that?
Sure.
And how can I learn from it and watch videos or read things? And I am not a hand-holding type of person. And in my grad degree, it was not like that at all. My advisor was super hands-off. Like, he only really talked to me, like, if I had a problem or addressed him specifically. And I know a lot of other students are the complete opposite. They, for any problem that comes up, anything, any thought, they're sending an email, writing a message, text, going to their office, talking to them. Because it's like that level of insecurity. It's like they're not confident in their thing. And a lot of it stems from we're not a master of the craft yet.
Right.
We haven't put in the time and effort to feel like confident about a thing. And I can understand that. But to a certain degree, when you start going to certain levels of professionalism or careers or sport, like you do need to have that. Learn to get rid of that insecurity.
I thought he was trying to help you.
I think he was, but he also just could be, he's been licking my ankle. Okay. And
Rocky. But no, I mean, but still, I mean, I wonder, part of that is also life experiences, like nature versus nurture. Like if you've not had to do hard things, you know, throughout your life, you just grew up
sheltered.
Sheltered or whatever it was, or you just were always afraid to take a hard path just because, you know, like, oh no, I don't know that path. And what if X, Y, and Z happens? What if I do get ridiculed? What if somebody makes fun of me? I don't want to go down that road. But, and that's just how you grow, just like always take the easy road out. Like you were talking about your dad, like learning, you know, how to, you know, Rangers versus paratroopers and jumping out of planes and stuff. And then you kind of have that mindset from him, but not everybody has that, where, you know, it takes a lot for a person to walk into a gym sometimes, especially when you've never done anything before. And like you were saying, like, let's go throw up 200 pounds over your head.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you might need that. And maybe you had success with that in some point of your life. And that's why you maybe stick that with whatever you do. Like, hey, can you look at this? Was this okay? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, for anything in life, is my work okay? Can you look at my lift? Can you look at, you know, is my writing okay? Whatever, X, Y, and Z. But
that's a phenomenal point that you make. Nature versus nurture.
Well, I was one of those people.
that kind of stemmed a thought, and it continues from the nature versus nurture and how you grew up or lived or the life experiences you've had. And,
yeah.
And I know my life has been full of trials and tribulations. Sure, I had a pretty good life. Like, we had enough money that there was always food on the table. Bills were always paid. Like, so I didn't want for anything, essentially.
Of course.
And, you know, I had love and support. But, like, that's not to say I had my own trials and tribulations, as I just said. Like, for example, this is, like, going back to, like, grade school. But, and I'm curious about you, so I'm going to phrase this towards you.
Yeah.
And then kind of finish on it after that's you fine. Answer. Were you ever... Were you bullied or anything in school? Or
It was a lot for my height, mainly and everything, because I was super short. They're all three. Like, we went elementary was K through seven,
mm-hmm.
and I was always the smallest guy. I mean, like, you know, even now, I'm 5'7" on a tall day.
Okay, and most people would call that a short king?
Or yeah, whatever. Short king, baby. Yeah,
whatever
or
they call
five,
it.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, but, like, that was the main thing that ever came to me. But I do remember, like, when K through seven was our elementary school, and then going into high school was 8 through 12. But I do remember, like, seventh grade, like, some of my friends were like, oh, you're going to high school? You're going to be pushed in lockers, man. You're going to be the, you know, guy putting trash cans and stuff. And I remember going into high school in eighth grade and being so worried that, like, my first day I was going to be, you know, like, all that, you know, back in those typical 80s, 90s movies where the nerds are always pushed in lockers or swirlies.
You're
and
getting
stuff.
A swirly or a wedgie.
Yeah, I was like, that's
going to
be me. Like, you know,
or...
I was literally like, going into eighth grade, maybe 100 pounds, and I don't know what I was then, probably 5 foot, whatever. But
wow,
yeah,
you really were kind of tiny. No offense, you were kind of a tinier kid.
Yeah, I was,
then,
I was super tiny. I mean, like, mom is 5'3", and my dad
it's
might
hard
be 5'8".
Hard to imagine looking at you now.
Well, I mean, like, you know, when
you've
I graduated,
grown well, man.
Thanks, man. But when I graduated high school, I was 140 coming out of high school, and I was always as a smaller guy. But yeah, I mean, that was to your point as far as bullying. That was the most it was. But after eighth grade, I was never pushing lockers. I was never stuffed in a trash can or anything. Just people would say, like, oh, you're short.
So to my point then, yeah. Like, with nature versus nurture and bullying kind of question, do you ever feel like that, like, struggle or thing you had to overcome, whether it be mentally, mm-hmm. physically, joke, laugh with the people that are making fun of you? Because once you laugh at a thing and they know that you're laughing at it, it's no longer a... They're not bringing you down anymore.
No.
At least they don't see it. And it,
no.
Like, but did you feel like you overcame it through, like, mentally or by physically changing?
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Yourself or the way you acted or like how did you
D all the above
or did you not I guess
no because we were able to take weightlifting as a class mm-hmm. in ninth grade. And
same. It was one of the greatest experiences of my
life.
Yeah,
and like that taught me a whole lot because in that class, you know, I was ninth grade and we had like seniors in there and juniors and mm-hmm. like I was, you know, would depend on what block we did block scheduling
mm-hmm.
and whatever block you got depending on, you know, who was going to be in that class. And then, you know, one class, I think I had a second period and like all the football team, like most of the, you know, the mm-hmm. alpha jocks were in that class and I was in ninth grade, but I was trying to do everything I could just like, hey, I want to be with these guys and I want to be – I was looking up to them to mm-hmm. a sense because I was like wanting to show them that, hey, I'm lifting too and I'm working out as hard as it y'all are. And that was one of the things that changed in my mindset, I guess, is that I was like, hey, you know, I'm not doing as much weight as you are, but I'm actually trying to stick with you on like – we would do hang cleans and bench press and squats is all we really did.
Hang cleans, the classic football movement.
But I was still the weakest guy there. But I remember we did a couple things like we'd run a mile or something and I was able to beat some of them and – and I was just like,
but it also garners a little bit of respect from those individuals,
yeah, like,
too.
That they, are, you like, know. We were all like, it was kind of like how CrossFit is. They were all like, you know, they didn't care how short I was or whatever. They were just like, you know, we on max days, no matter what was your max? Was it 135? All right, mm-hmm. I'm going for 145. They'd come up and like high five you, whatever, back then. I was like, oh, yeah.
And then you
part of
probably
the
became like your own worst enemy, thinking that, like, I need to get better.
That's what it was. Because like, I want to be doing 205 or whatever they were
yeah.
doing. Yeah, that was me.
So, like, in a way, that, like, bullying, that, like, negative thoughts that you had about it, in a sense, kind of was a motivational kicker for you to to do something that drove you, made you, I would say, lifting, made you a better human being, whether that's just physically, mentally, or, like, just learning discipline, practice, consistency. Well, they're all good life skills, but I think the one I'm trying to point out is that it, like, you overcame a struggle. And as a kid, like, sure, like, as adults, bullying is not, like, a thing I think about as, like, a life problem for me. I'm a white cis male, so it's not a thing I deal with, right, or have to worry about. Course. But, like, other people might, and I don't want to belittle that, I guess is what I was saying there. But, like, as a kid, that might have shaped you quite a bit into, like, especially at middle school, high school age, like, a young man, like, developing, getting all those hormones, growing, learning, going through life experiences, but knowing that, like, for a while you were shit on.
Yeah.
And whether you weren't given swirlies maybe to that extreme, but, like, it affected you on it.
Like, I mean, I still think about it to that day.
It pushed you to do a thing. And, like, then circling back to the nature versus nurture, I think an individual that never experienced that, like, bullying or perseverance or having to struggle through a thing, whether that be poverty or, like, seeing a parent struggle with, like, drug addiction or, like, those are examples as well, just to, like, kind of cover some more bases, give examples. But bullying, I think, is a common one that either you are the bully or you are being bullied, right? Most kids experience some level of that in school. And I was also bullied quite a lot, and similar story to you. Like, I got into, like, high school, end of middle school, and I was with my dad that summer, and I was like, Dad, I want to go with you to the gym in the mornings, like, when you're working out with, like, the Ranger dudes. And I know, like, I, like, won't be able to lift as much as you, and I don't know anything, but, like, I got to start somewhere, and I want to – my goal was actually to see my bicep vein.
Oh, sexy.
I wanted that so bad, the vascularity. That was, like, the goal I set for myself. But, like, it also taught me discipline, sacrifice. And then when I went to school that next year, I was no longer the gay emo kid.
The gay emo.
Yeah, I had a phase where I dressed emo, like, emo skater, and
they called you gay.
That I was called gay. Yeah.
Huh.
That was, I think, stemmed out of jealousy, because I've always been really good talking with women, and I have always had more women friends than men friends. So I think it stemmed a lot of, like, jealousy is where that, like, he's gay.
Yeah, kind of like back in the day when you said, like, okay, you know, let's go out and eat at McDonald's. Somebody be like, that's gay. I don't want to do that.
No, like that, not or just... like you're referring to gay being used as, like, the word stupid or almost like a substitute for stupid.
They would just call you because they were jealous you were talking to the girls.
They legitimately were trying to, like, bring out my sex, like, say that I was sexually, like, homosexual, and that, like, just to bring me down. I wore skinny jeans. I, like, you know, had the black straightened hair. I probably spent more time in the bathroom than some of the chicks at school. It was very vain, and, like, I was going through a lot. The family was divorcing, and, like, I didn't know who I was, and I was struggling with, like, perfectionism, and, like, dude, I like perfectionism to the point that if there was, like, a hair, like a dog or cat hair on my clothes, and since I wore all black, you saw it all. I would, like, I couldn't go to school. I would be so anxious, like, pulling every hair off. Like, things had to be perfect. Like,
I get that.
I really struggled with it when I was that age. So, like, being, like, bullied on top of it. And I always was the new kid. I went to so many different schools, like, being in a military family. It was almost every year for a while that I was at a new school, having to make new friends and develop some kind of, like, community for myself. But the point of that was, like, the bullying was consistent until about, like, high school. And then things, like, changed. I started working out, and I developed, like, a sense of self-confidence. So I think my point here is that, like, it was not the nature of it. It was the nurture. It was nurtured into me. It was something that I had to learn and work for and develop, right? Yeah. Like, so I think what I'm going in a long story about, like, how, like, those types of things, nature versus nurture, can be very influential in the way you view success, your goals going forward in the future, and how you view success too. So yeah, that was long.
And no, it wasn't. And
but that was my thought there. And it kind of stemmed to, I heard, like, people joking, like, our age or a little bit older, they were joking about the youth now, and they're like, bring back bullying, because everyone's so wokeified and
To make people harder?
Yeah, in a sense. And, like, in a way, I get, like, how what they're trying to say. They're, like, sticks and stones, but words never hurt me, yeah, kind of a thing. And I get it. To a certain degree, I understand where they're coming from. And I don't necessarily agree with that entirely. Like, a world without bullying may probably be better. But, like, I see what they're saying is because it does force you as an individual to, like, learn and have self-growth and gain confidence or struggle through something tough. And that's not saying, like, I wish the experiences I had or, like, you had on another person. But I do think they help me grow in a way. Say, and, yeah, and, yeah, they, like, sucked at the time and growing up. And it was terrible. But, like, I learned a lot from it. Like, and it was a thing for sure. So, like, I get back to, like, the root of that conversation is, yes, I think nature versus nurture is a huge, huge factor in an individual's success or being the GOAT or something. But that kind of, like, makes me think then, too, like, because I had said then some people are just born for that level of greatness. Yeah. Like, the cards were right. They are in a situation where, like, life just is going to – it worked. And I want to use the word fate. It was fated to happen. Like, the Greek gods – the oracles, like, it was destined to happen. Do you believe, like, in, like, fate? I guess that's kind of, like, a side topic, but, like, I've been thinking about that, like, a lot, like, lately. Is, like, fate, is that, like, a thing, or do we just manifest it for ourselves to give us hopes and dreams, or...
I go back and forth with that a lot.
It's a very heady topic, I'm sorry, but...
I like topics like that, but, like, the other day I was having a conversation with someone... Well, even like last night when I was in Charlotte, we were talking about, like, one of my best friends lives there now, and it's like he's been there, like, once we graduated from university or whatever. And so I was thinking that what would my life be like if I would have took a chance and moved down here and just got any random job I could, and, like, mm-hmm, would fate bring me to better opportunities here? Would I be further in my career? Would I be, you know, married with kids now? Would I be whatever? And but, you know, but also, did fate make me stay here in Radford for ever since, you know, we graduated, basically. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if do you make your own fate. I don't know. I mean, do you just wait for doors to open and then you either choose to go through them or not? I mean, do you look for opportunities? I mean, do you manifest the manifestation? I don't know about that. Like, I like putting stuff out there, but I think it's more of just like, well, that's a goal I have. But I mean, if I can say I want to be a millionaire all I want to, but if I'm not really working towards being a millionaire, then
what's the word for, like, when someone in a story or a book or an epic poem or something, like, they are told their fate, like, in,
like, foreshadowing,
kind of, they're told their fate from an oracle or prophecy or someone, and then by hearing it, they, in a sense, manifest it. They make it come true because they know their fate, and it usually doesn't happen in the way that they, like, anticipate it. So, for example, like, say an individual knows how they're gonna die. They're, like, they're fated to die from this thing. So they go about their entire life trying to avoid that thing, yes, being extra safe, careful, or always thinking about it. It's in the back of their mind, and they're worried about it. But by thinking about it or knowing that thing, you, in a sense, create it and make it happen because you've lived your life to try to avoid it, but you actually have created it. And there's a word for it. It's like... it's something related, manifested fate, or it's a literary device that's used very commonly. And,
okay. And I can't think of it.
But the point is the same, is like sometimes knowing your fate.
It's kind of like free will. Like, do we have free will? Is that what you're, is this kind of touching on that?
Or it is kind of touching on free will in a sense, or is like we have free will and like by someone telling you a thing that you're going to do and you being afraid or looking forward to it, then make it happen because it has now been planted in your mind, almost like a goal or something to avoid. Mm-hmm. So you go about a life in a particular way to avoid or make a thing happen. And because you knew from the get-go a thing was going to happen, you act in accordance with that. Mm. So I guess like the thought here is like there's a difference between fate that is like, you don't know your fate, like right now. You're like,
of course not.
What is my life? Have I been destined for these things to happen in this order, in this sequence? Like, do I have like a purpose or a role? Or is this my life? Mm-hmm. Or like, maybe someone told you you were destined for greatness at a young age. And since you heard that, you're like, well, hell, I feel that, and I know it's going to happen. So
put yourself up on a pedestal, and
or you manifest it for yourself. I'm always like, I've always think that like sometimes manifesting things is real. Like they say it with weightlifting, and I know I keep going back to that, but it's a consistent, and it's something you can learn a lot from very simply. Is that hell? What was that point? Fate. They tell us to visualize a lift, right? Before you do it, think to yourself, especially if you're going for a max or working on something specifically, visualize it. Think, how do I want this to look? How do I see myself doing the thing?
Sure.
Visualize it and then execute it, right? You've almost, you're in a sense kind of fading it to happen. You're psyching your brain out to like, I've already done it because I've seen myself do it.
Yes.
Metaphorically. It's like, is that... Do you think that can be like a route to success or like a thing that can guide someone or like, I don't know really where I was going with that, but it's like, I've thought about it a lot with my life and I know I touched on it and just interrupted you. So I'm sorry, but
no, you're good, man. I don't mind.
Touched on it on the last podcast. I know I went into like how I got into like entomology and the life choices that I had made that led me to get to my undergrad and then grad school. And like, I always joke that like, if I hadn't dropped acid that one night and like ate, or watch like the Wild Thornberry movie, I would never have made the decision to go to school. And then I would never have done XYZ that's brought me to a place in life that I'm successful, happy, thriving. So I felt like that was fated to happen. I do kind of think that like in my life that like there are some things that were fated to happen. My mom getting injured when I was younger sucks. And I don't think it's manifest destiny. I don't think that like a greater being had a plan for her per se, because I'm not religious and don't think that way, but like I do think in a way that it did happen in a fated way. Like I had to go through that.
Yeah, well, it kind of makes sense. I mean, well, it makes a lot of sense just because, I mean, looking back on it, you know, like with walking on my hands and stuff, I was always able to do that as a little kid for whatever reason. I was always kind of gymnastics. Maybe I was just had too much energy. My parents didn't know what to do with me or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, I've never had to use that until really I got to CrossFit. I mean, when I was going to PE classes in high school and elementary school, my teachers would have me do it because nobody else could do it. And they thought it was awesome. And but I never just thought like, this is something I do. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But then we had weightlifting there. And then all of a sudden I've always been interested in like physical activity of some sort, like kind of teach it into a fashion. I mean, like I did PE as my undergrad. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, maybe, and to your point though, fate kind of brought, you know, reason I've stuck with CrossFit for so long for me to put it all together with that. And that's why I keep sticking with it, just because I enjoy it. I mean, I like it. I mean, I think it's fun. I like helping other people to come in and like, you know, you still can be whatever you want to be as long as you just, you know, lock out the mechanisms, you know, like you ignore all the booze. You just, if you really want to do something, you'll do it. And
that's such a great point is like, it,
like, you know, if you really want to lose,
crackheads don't wake up with money in their pocket. Right. But yet they know at the end of the day, they're going to get some crack.
Yeah.
They're going to hustle. They're going to do whatever they got to do to get that thing. And I know this is a terribly bad, like drug associated example, but like, a lot of people associate them as being like the lower levels of society and like,
of course,
scum, or like, not trying to talk bad about anyone or anything, but like generally people do put them lower on like social ranks. But that, take that lesson I just gave you. That person, sure, it's for crack and to get high and like continue their like,
but if they actually addiction, put that to something positive.
But they had the energy, they had the goal and the drive to do the thing. We, even a crackhead, can make a goal and achieve it. We all can.
That's a good point.
But you have to, like, what did you just say? You have to...
You have to be willing to lock out the mechanisms. And,
or, like, you have to want it. You have to have the desire.
You have to work for it. I mean...
You have to have the passion, self-drive. You're not going to lose 100 pounds just by thinking about it. No. You got to do it. You're not going to get a PhD by sitting there wishing about it.
You got to do something.
You just got to do it. And whether it's one page at a time or 1 pound at a time on a max or... anything, you know, you put the mind to it and the work and the willpower and a little bit of luck sometimes. And like you can achieve that. And I don't know, it's one of the greatest takeaways I've taken from like schooling and stuff too, though, is like you have to, it can't be your advisor's goal. It's got to be your goal. Mm-hmm. Otherwise you're going to feel burnt out crazy fast or quit a thing because it was never your desire. That brings me to like nature and nurture again, but like that's when some parents put so much pressure on their kids because they see like Olympic potential or academic potential or something, but the kids doing it because they've been raised to be a gymnast or
yeah.
Like look at Mal O'Brien, right? Like or Mal.
You got it.
Mel or yeah,
Mal?
Mal.
No.
Sorry, Mal. I know you're listening to this. I'll send it to you personally.
She's next week's guest.
Oh, really? Can you have me over?
Yeah, do it three-way. But I'm
chill. I was going to let that slide, but I was like, I can't, actually. But, like, where was I specifically going with that? So child prodigy. Those kids are fated by their parents to do a certain thing, succeed to a certain crazy level, be a goat. From such an early age, like they've been trained, nurtured, catered to, and we're talking about like the top 1% of kids that are like that, right?
Of course,
it's very rare. Need money, privilege, opportunities, luck, genetics. Fuck, look at Matt Frazier, two Olympians as parents. Like he was bred for it, essentially, as close to genetic engineering of humans as we can get without actually doing it.
Of course,
but like to my point, like she was fated for it, and was. Looked like gonna be the next Tia Toomey, in a way. Like was young, strong, had lots of room for improvement, was great at the sport. But then, like as she like came to an age where she was like realizing, like wow, I've been doing this thing for so long and for so many other people. Like I don't want to speak for her, but this is kind of how I viewed what she did and dropping out of CrossFit competitively, at least recently, was like. I've been doing this for other people for so long that I don't even know what I want in my life anymore.
I agree.
And like, it sucks to see someone that's so talented at a thing make that decision, especially when you're really, really talented at a thing. And I imagine that's how people thought when I like was like, I don't want to use my PhD. I want to go open a gym, follow my passion. But they're like, man, you worked so hard for that thing. Like you've at least got to do it for a little bit and make sure you really don't want to do it. But I feel like her sentiment there in a way that like, man, like, if you don't want to do a thing, you really shouldn't do it. You shouldn't feel pressured to do it. And like she was, like I said, fated in a way, like by her parents and everyone around her, coaches, the gym, social pressures, the world to be this great thing. But it wasn't in like her cards in a sense. Like she didn't want it for herself. And that stopped her, which is good that she like realized that like and wanted a different life. Or maybe she'll get back into it and realize like I did want to do this, but like, I don't really know where I was going with that, but it's like the child prodigy thing. Yeah. And it's like those individuals are in a sense fated for that life to be great and have all of like the opportunity in front of them.
Yeah, and what's like, do you know, like you just said, like, does she really want that or did her parents want it? Yeah. And like they were living vicariously through her, but, and if she was just doing basically, if she was a good person, like I'll just do what my parents want me to mm-hmm. do and just make them happy and I'll keep doing it. But then all of a sudden, you know, life is fucking fast, dude. And all of a sudden,
you're 19 and you haven't even been on a date.
Yeah, and you're like, whoa, wait. Yeah, like you just, I'm 19.
But
wait,
you're about to
be like, what have I done?
Champion at a sport that like hardly people can even do. And I can't imagine the social pressures on her at that point. And other people being like, are you competing this year? Are you competing this year?
And you're expected to achieve at a certain level every time you go out.
Or people are projecting that you're going to beat Toomey, a champion, like, and an Olympian in and of itself. And the pressures associated with that at a young age and living your whole life feeling like you're destined to do a thing.
Yeah. But did she ever actually feel like, was this really what I wanted in life? You know, so maybe she did like enjoy it, but maybe she was like, I want to learn, you know, a neurologist or whatever. Maybe
I want to live life. I want to go.
I don't know. I mean,
Rumspringa. I want to go do drugs and fuck people and go to Jersey Shore and fist pump. What's that club they go to? I can't remember in the show. I'm blanking.
Bro, I don't know about that.
It still exists. It's still really popular.
The club is?
The club they like frequent all the time in the show, is still like it's popular because of the show still.
I get that, but she missed out on those experiences and maybe she was like, maybe I'll try. I mean, like I think like that, you know, like, you know, I'm coming up getting close to 40 and I'm like, wait, am I at where I wanted to be at? You know, did I skip out on a few things that, you know, I feel like some of the things that I went through life and that was my parents and my family wanting to help me out, but they were like telling me like, you know, you need to do this. This mm-hmm. is your path. And I was kind of like, I don't know. But like when I was younger, I'd be like, yeah, well, if they want me to do it, I'll go ahead and do it. You know, as far as like,
it's the encouragement and an elder, an adult, someone you respect, trust, telling you to do a thing. Like you're like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. And if you're not like a rebellious person, then you're going to take that wisdom or like, do it because you're told to.
Like I went to college just because I was told I had to. And also I've
was told basically, if you don't go to college, you're a loser. And I was like, well, I don't want to be a loser.
Yeah.
But I had no, that's why I went to community college first. I had no fucking clue what to do.
So it's interesting. It was like back to like the bully. You were almost like, I wouldn't, bully is probably a strong word for that, but you were pressured into that decision.
Yeah.
You did it because you felt like you had to do it. Yeah. You had other people's interests
that's what
at mind, and that's why you did the thing. And luckily you did. You succeeded at college. It. You got your master's. Yeah. And
I'm not knocking them by any means. I mean, they were just trying to be helpful and just saying, like, this is what I'd do if I was you and stuff like that. But, well, maybe I want to go to New Jersey and fist pump in the club or whatever.
Did anyone ever ask you, like, hey, Chris, what are you? What do you want to do? Were you ever asked that?
We had our guidance counselor. Like every, it was junior or
maybe,
senior.
I guess guidance counselor is one thing, and maybe you felt really comfortable with them.
But now they may. We had,
like,
to go.
Did
to
you
them.
Like a family member or someone you really trusted ever like ask you that or like?
I don't think so, man.
Encourage your own self discovery in a way.
No, just you know, when I went in there, I thought everyone's like, you should be an accountant because you're gonna make a lot of money and stuff, and then. Then along the way, somebody's like, well, you're probably not going to like that. You should change. And then
like an accountant, like, showing your toes on video? Or I'm fiddling around.
But then it went to, like, oh, we'll just do business and just, you know, run whatever.
Everyone does a business. Yeah. If you don't know what to do, you just get a business.
All right, I'll do business. Yeah. And then finally somebody, which this was kind of good advice, like, I did tell somebody at one point I wanted to do computers, and then this was like me talking to my advisor, and they're like, no, you have too much energy. You probably shouldn't do that because you'll be sitting at a desk all day. And I was like, oh.
That's interesting. Yeah, and then, I mean, I guess like the logic
so I remember,
inherently makes sense.
It,
but
I mean,
like,
I kind of got it. And at the time in college, I was like, I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't sit at a desk all day. I mean, I like, you know, working out and I like doing stuff and being active or whatever. And I remember telling my mom about this and she was like, well, just do PE.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I get the summers off. I mean, I can coach something. I mean, it's just PE. I mean, it's not that hard.
That was your like goal to was to be
during
a school
that time.
Teacher,
yeah, but I was like really a, like, I remember going through it and I was like, do I really want to do this? I really want to be. Like, it was more of just like, well, I mean, the pay sucks, but I get summers off.
So I feel like a terrible friend. I don't actually know what your like undergrad and master's are. And
P's undergrad sports management is.
Okay. Because I know you like have, you've talked about the computers and I know what you do now. Like, so I was like, I thought he did have a tech degree. And like even with like a podcast, like I guess it's not the hardest thing to do per se, but most people look at it or think about it and they're like, there's no way I could do that. That's too difficult.
That was me.
And like it's only difficult if you make it difficult and don't want to learn a thing. But like, so you mentioned like computers and stuff.
Yeah,
and
that was like, one of my things. But and like and kind of going back to your point about fate and stuff, I remember getting like the first computer, me playing with them all day. We first get the internet and stuff, and I was trying to learn everything about
dial up.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. But anyway. But once I got my PE degree, and I was like, well, I need a master's degree to be better at whatever I wanted to do. Then I was like, well, I'll just try to be a strength conditioning coach. And if that doesn't work out, then I will just kind of be an administrator in like a sports facility of some sort. So it kind of worked out. But at the end of the day, I was like, I don't really like this anymore.
Mm. So you've moved away from it then, like as in your brain or a goal for yourself, you no longer see that as like a future for yourself, or you don't desire it any longer. You kind of like tested the waters and you're like, no, this is not what I want to do for the rest of my life or for my rest of my career or even grow from this point.
I knew like, a part of it I wouldn't mind it, but I remember hearing like somewhere along, I was doing an internship for RU Athletics here, and I remember like I was talking with their strength coaches and he was telling me like, yeah, man, we work like 16-hour days. And he was like, you know, they have to get in before the athletes get in, which is like 4:35 a.m. And he said, we're not leaving until the last team is
do the program and talk with like specific athletes every day. Do team reviews, team things, and coach classes, or probably have a class or two, like a fitness class that they have.
They're coaching multiple teams. They're in there all day. Like you said, programming. I mean, like doing individual sessions with athletes, and then you know, plus the other, I guess, administrative side of the work. And I remember just saying like 12 to 16-hour days.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, we're in here on holidays.
And dude, I bet half of it is administrative shit, like just working through the campus, scheduling things, or telling someone to schedule a thing.
Yeah, having to do
like,
talks and do recruits and stuff. And I was like,
watch videos.
I mentioned it was like, I don't want to be here 16 hours. And plus on holidays and stuff, I remember instantly like, this ain't for me.
Like, is this my passion?
Yeah. I mean, I like it, but I don't like it that much.
That's, I can relate very hard to that with entomology. Like I am good at it. I have a everything I do, I have a passion for, and that's a character trait I'm proud of, is that I don't do things just to do them. I do them because I like them and I'm passionate about them. But that being said, there is like this like, do I want to do entomology for the rest of it? I still have it, even though I've like felt a resurgence and I'm excited for my postdoc. I'm like, man, I know I'm in 10 years, I don't think I'll be an entomologist. And that's okay. But I can relate to that in a sense, like realizing through a thing or doing a thing that your heart isn't entirely there. Exactly. It's a stepping stone. Or
did you feel a little burnout with it? Like, you know, we were talking about earlier in the podcast, you said something that like, you, like the last time we did this, you didn't know if you still wanted to do it or anything, but was that part of burnout too? Maybe.
Dude, the burnout was incredible. I've never felt so, I think that word's overused a lot, but I've never felt so like thin, like butter spread over too much toast, thin and just drawn out and almost like defeated, but I knew I couldn't quit. Like,
I get it.
There's only a few things in my life that I would say I've quit. And looking back, I'm glad that I did and made that decision. Like, jujitsu, it wasn't for me. I kept getting injured. I didn't like it. I'm glad I quit. I was wasting an hour of my day every day getting hurt and not enjoying it. And it was like, I felt,
obligated.
I did feel a little obligated to do it. And that's neither here nor there. Whether I don't actually think I was obligated. It was a pressure I put on myself. And I felt that way. And whether that was there or not is neither here nor there. But oh, I just smacked my nose on the mic. but like, and that's a tiny example, a little thing, a hobby, but I'm glad I quit it. But it was a really tough decision for me because I don't like quitting things. I don't like admitting defeat. That I can't do a thing.
Of course.
And that actually wasn't what any of that was. It was like, I'm wasting an hour of my week doing a thing I don't like to do. Like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not an angry, violent person. And cool, I think it's cool. I love mixed martial arts. I think it's awesome. I don't watch the sport or anything like that, but I respect it. It's awesome. It's a mastery of a skill like any other. And one of the most, like, mastery over the human body that you can get, like beyond, like almost to like, maybe not to the level, but like I think of it like being a Shaolin monk or like, you know, those people that can do handstands on a finger kind of a thing and meditate for an hour. Like that's mastery of the human body, and that's really cool, and I love it, and I would love to get into it, but it's sometimes you do a thing and you realize it's cool, but it's not for me. And
I get it.
Sometimes you got to admit that and make that decision, and it's tough. It can be. Some people have an easier time with that than others. And I think, like I alluded to, like that perfectionism in myself makes that difficult. Because even if I'm bad at a thing and don't like it, I'm like, well, I know I can be better. I can be the best. Or whether it's like the best in a group of people. Like that's kind of how I started CrossFit. And like, I think I've told you this before, but when I got there and I saw like you and James, I like immediately was like, okay, not only aesthetically are those guys like ripped, and that is like my physical like appearance goal that I want for myself, but like the way you guys performed and the confidence and like the almost respect it like garnered in the gym at being proficient in a thing, and like maybe master is not the right word, but like respected in a community because of the skill, time you put in, your coach. And you've also like garnered the reciprocity and respect of the individuals around you. I was like, wow, that's like, I know this is like their second job and they like are doing this because they love it. But like, I want that for myself. I saw that and I was like, I was envious and then made it my goal.
Nice.
And I maybe I have or haven't told you that like you and like James were a goal. Like for years, I set my goal to like that level. I was like, I will be that good. If I am not, I will keep trying. And like, it's just been like within the last couple of months that I finally feel like I can actually like hold on and keep up with you. Like the one workout I did more of the squats for you.
Yeah.
And that's the first workout I ever did more of the reps than you on something we shared. Almost always it's like you did more muscle ups.
Right.
You did more double unders. Like I was in a sense being carried a little bit, not a lot, but like, and it's something you were better at.
I would never
like,
say I'd carry you.
But like it finally got to that point in my brain where I was like, you know what? I feel like I've achieved that goal and I've garnered respect from the people that I coach and work with and
100%
have a role in a community. And
that's cool.
Oh, man,
that's badass.
There's like acknowledging that and like looking back and being like, before then I didn't feel like I had a role in any community, even in like the entomology department.
Really?
And a lot of students I've been told like look up to me or have like as a senior like student, one of the students that's been there the longest, like through like this recent cohort of students. And I've been held to like a high regard by other students. They call me one of the, like the, one of the best, better grad students. Like, and that sounds like very cocky to say, but those are not my words. Cause I think of myself as one of the worst grad students, like in comparing myself to others, which I know I shouldn't do. I'm like, I don't know where they're coming from with this. And I don't see a role in that community cause it's a job too. And I don't like putting my personal life and a job together. Like, I don't like hanging out like with my peers and coworkers like that. But at the gym, while I do work there, I feel like up in a community and I have a place and a role. And while it's so insignificant and like the greater like thing of life, like it's literally just these people working out or social hour or camaraderie. But it is, sometimes I can have like a terrible day and not even talk about it with someone, but just be there and help someone, make someone notice a thing about their lift, or just talk with the boys or work out with you, or like, yeah. And it like, it, the feeling of like a sense of want in the community. Like if I left that community, I would feel like people would actually miss me and
100%.
Like want me back. Like similar, like James leaving, like yeah. There's a void still from his absence that I don't think will ever really be filled. There's a charismatic nature to him and proficiency in the art of the sport that people both respected, loved, and he had a leadership role as well. So like sure. there was a lot associated with it, but like I wanted that so bad. And it helped me a lot in grad school too, to like realize that like I do have a place in this world. And just because it's not associated with my career.
But you could transfer that over into.
And not only that, but the life skills I've learned at CrossFit, not just like functional fitness, it's great to be fit, but like talking to people,
yeah.
having conversations, dealing with a person you may not like very much, but like you all are doing the same thing and it's together. And you know what? I might not want to hang out with you in my personal life, but we're here right now and I'm going to respect you as an yep. individual, and you have
well
a value
said.
In this community as much as I do.
Very well
and I
said.
Don't want to feel like you to feel like you're ever left out or not included because of that. Like we all have a role, and maybe our roles are different than others, or like I'm more of a supportive coaching role for a lot of people, but like then I'm friends for others or a voice. Like
that's
I might
cool. That's
be
cool, man.
I don't know if you've had an experience as a coach where someone's told you something about their life that's like either dark or depressing or like a
couple times,
but they are like, I've never told anyone this
yes.
kind of a moment. And you're like, wow, one, do I feel like privileged or honored mm-hmm. That you trusted me enough to say that. But it's also like, I know that I am kind of transient in their life in a way. Yeah. I'm consistent. We see each other regularly, but I'm not a part of their inner circle,
right.
their like family. So they can feel a comfort in divulging a thing that is stressing them out or really bothering them, or like, hell, maybe it's stupid, but whatever. It's like to give a person that time is great. Yeah. And it's like part of my greater, like I actually put it in most of my cover letters. Like I almost always reference like some of my work at the gym and coaching. And I always say I love helping people become the best version of themselves, whether that is through fitness or having a place where they feel accepted, desired, wanted, missed, or to just feel like they're safe in a place and like can be themselves. Is like having that role as a coach and like a member of the gym has been one of the, like the greatest things I've gotten from it. And it's transferred into everything I've done since then. Like and public speaking, obviously, but like that's probably my greatest takeaway from there. Or like, and I don't even really know how we got on that topic. I guess we're just rambling at this point, but it was like, that was, and is still like one of the greatest things about it, in my opinion.
That's very well said, man.
But with that said, I gotta take a leak. Do you want to take a break right now?
Yeah, let's take a small break and then we'll, how long have we been going? We've been going
for like an hour and 10.
That's cool. So that's like 20. Right at like the cusp of
yeah.
the current.
You want to take a break and we'll just end it like we did last time? Like we just do a couple cards and a shot and.
We can keep going if you want. We can keep drinking.
Well,
we can keep
well I was going to say, well, I mean, yeah, if you got to pee, then go pee. And
I do get to pee and I want to
yeah, we'll
like,
do another
chug a beer. And
yeah, we'll do it a few more minutes and
cool.
all that. Maybe okay, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone.
With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.